It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. It can feel like things are spinning out of control. Technology companies, even more so. Things are changing so rapidly that we could even state confidently that change is no longer just an event that might happen once in a life cycle. It's a constant. And I feel like I know plenty of leaders who are, and I myself am hoping for, pining for days when it's maybe gets a little more stable, if not entirely stable. But the bad news is that it's not gonna, and we have to deal with it as it stands. It is going to continue to be this crazy. So with market changes, reorganizations, AI, return to office, shifting employee expectations, how do leaders adapt to the changing climate? So today I have on with me today, Zara Ghulam Hussain, who is a senior HR tech executive, has been through 20 plus years in SaaS and FinTech, successful IPOs, 10 plus M&As, has been at PagerDuty, Avant Software, Adyen, Glue Mobile, and more. And she is here to talk to us about what it takes to lead through unprecedented times. Zara, we finally got you on. Thank you so much for coming on Great Mondays Radio.
Years in the making since we first, a decade in the making. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, exactly. So Zara and I were, we worked together. I was a culture consultant and Zara was head of HR for a time at PagerDuty, and unbeknownst to me, and maybe you never told me, IPOs were on the horizon, and we went through quite a number of projects as this PagerDuty was going through an IPO. That was quite an experience, and you have so much experience in the tech world as an HR leader. And I feel like you have a perspective now, and that's why I want you to talk. That's why we're talking about this stuff, where it's just this kind of what do you do as, how do you lead, even if leader is not in your official title, like how do you lead through this time? So that's where I think the conversation I want everybody to kind of start with. You brought up in our sort of pre-conversation, fear, uncertainty, doubt. And let's start there about the FUD, about FUD, which is, I feel like sounds like kind of where, what it is. What is it like to work in an organization where it's just a constant barrage of fear, uncertainty, and doubt?
Yeah, you know, as you said before, right, change isn't a one-time disruption. I think we have to consider it as the new normal, right? And it can definitely be exhausting, but I see also it can be full of lots of possibilities, right? And if I think of like early on in my career, I thought leadership meant projecting certainty at all costs, right? And I believed that's what people wanted. But of course, as always, you learn the hard way. When things change, right, pretending to have all the answers really destroys credibility. And what I feel is that people actually don't need that perfect map, right? They want, I have like these like principles, right? Honesty, communication, and a leader who really helps them make sense of kind of all of the as unknown. And mm-hmm. I think leading through FUD is really messy, right? And I think it takes showing up with like consistency and not avoiding the hard conversations.
So when we think about that sort of mental leap from leader as kind of bulwark or anchor in the storm to one that is okay with it being messy. What are sort of the essential like differences between those two? Because I do feel like, let's say in the 90s, that you could get away with being a leader that was you know, could say, here's what we're going to be doing and follow me. But that's, you know, just impossible now. So what are the kind of the, how would you describe the difference in those type of leadership styles?
Yeah, no, that's a great thing. I think the first one, like I have these principles that I kind of think through, and I have lots of examples and practice as well as all the mistakes that I've made with leaders. But I think the first one is leaders nowadays need to acknowledge the uncertainty, but kind of create clarity where you can, right? So as I just said before, right, don't pretend you have all the answers. Acknowledge the unknown. One of the biggest things I call is like create what I call like zones of uncertainty or zones of certainty. Sorry. And what's stable today, right? So you know what's stable today, which is like the quarter's priorities. Hopefully they stay stable. They may shift and pivot. Your company's values, those should also be stable. And also what are your commitments to your customers, right? Like humans love certainty. So I think that's like the biggest thing. I can give you a couple examples if you want of things that we did, right?
Yeah. So it's creating zones of certainty.
Yeah.
So tell me about those.
Yeah. So a CEO I worked with at a smaller startup is that we kind of held these like 15-minute weekly meetings, right? And especially all hands during like times of change, like a layoff or something like that, right? That's what's happening a lot nowadays. We would say like, hey, this is what we know and this is what we don't know slide, right? And that can change every week. That's one example. And then another example is another company that we worked at. We had an organizational change, right? We had a new chief revenue officer, and that leader, that exec was going to be making all these kind of org changes. And so what we had is the leadership team, we created these mini toolkits. So we were all aligned and we thought we were all aligned, and then we put it in writing and we weren't aligned. So we went through the messiness ourselves as a exec team, rolled it out to the senior leadership team. And then we had an AMA, ask me anything kind of session. It was just, you're just sitting there in a room. Employees can ask questions. We use Slidos. People could vote up and down. Mm-hmm. We put some parameters around the questions. And then we sort of like cascaded messages. And then we just had a dialogue about the change as well.
I like this being, so the two examples that you just gave, a slide of what we know and what we don't know, and mm-hmm. a toolkit where it's the process of actually getting it down. I mean, that's the power of a contract, right? Like it's in mm-hmm. black and white.
Yeah.
Let's not just go, we're aligned, right? Yes, we are. Okay. You know, great. Let's go forward. Wait a minute. I thought you said, and to me, right, you're putting it down. You're actually documenting it. And so words are powerful. And if we can actually codify what we mean and then deliver that to ourselves and to others, that becomes an exercise that allows us to understand more deeply. And I think this goes to your second principle of communication. This is, I think, so clear. And I don't know about you, but I've never been inside of an organization that has communicated too much. It's always indexed in the other direction.
Yeah.
So let's keep talking about this kind of leader, of being able to articulate or being able to lead through uncertainty.
Yeah. So another principle that I call is what I call kind of building trust through kind of transparency and follow through, right? The biggest thing for me is so with this toolkit or however process you use as a company, right? I don't have just one playbook. It's like what works best for the company.
Yeah.
A lot of people say like what you need to do, but they don't share the why behind the reason, the Simon Sinek why, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And then kind of say what you do and then do it. And then of course, the biggest thing is like admit mistakes. A lot of leaders don't like doing that, but I think you need to admit mistakes. And I can give you an example, right? A VP of enterprise sales that I was working with and I was partnering with, we missed a revenue target, right? Which is not great at a company, especially if that's your role.
Yep.
I worked with the leader, like, why did it happen? What was learned and what changes were coming? And credibility went really up and not down. And the biggest thing was that the company was moving from mid-market to enterprise, and we had to get what's called like value-based selling. And so people knew, but the problem is we didn't have enough enablement around what value-based selling was. So we talked about all the mistakes we made, and it's like, okay, and now what? What are we going to help the employees like upskill in the value-based selling? We could have gone a little bit faster about that, but that was sort of a lesson learned as well.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about that, where it's not what I think, what I find is interesting about that story was that that sales leader not only acknowledged, which in itself is hard, but underscored it, like made it a full presentation of, I fucked up. Here's what went wrong. I know it, right? So it's like the first step that is kind of the most powerful is acknowledging that I screwed up, right? So taking responsibility. But, you know, it's not just an email. It was like, here's, I'm analyzing it, and it's, I am pointing the finger, and I'm like, here is how I screwed up. Hey, everybody, I screwed, you know, big neon sign, right? And you're saying that that led to additional credibility.
Yeah.
And what I think here is this building of trust, which anybody who's listened to any of my, any of my episodes or heard me talk at all, it's all about that trust. And so it is so counterintuitive and it feels so scary. And, but I just think that that is really, really compelling. So acknowledging those mistakes, I made a guess, an unintelligent guess, right? Like I wasn't trying to bullshit you, but I made a guess and I screwed up. That wasn't the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So that's a great example.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think another one I can talk about the same leader is.
Hey, if it's a good leader, then you got some good stories.
I really like this leader a lot. So I think this lead with humanity, that's kind of my third or empathy, or that's my third principle, right? Which is.
Okay. All right.
Kind of acknowledge change is going to happen every single day for the rest of our lives. And it's going to happen at a much faster pace. You can read all the articles about it. I won't go into the theory, but there's a lot there. So fear and doubt are natural when it comes to change. So don't dismiss it. I would say a lot of companies, especially like high growth startups, they celebrate endurance, but they also don't celebrate like adaptability as a strength, right? Because you're going to be shifting and pivoting with everything changing. Mm-hmm. I can give you kind of an example of a leader who led with humanity. A mistake a leader, this similar leader did is that when they came on board, they seemed like everyone was like, I don't get this person, right? They're never showing their vulnerability. They're kind of dismissing employee concerns and they're creating distance. And that humanity builds loyalty, especially in turbulence, right? This was kind of happening COVID times as well. Mm-hmm. I knew this person was human. I knew that they shared a lot of vulnerable things with me. So I gave the leader feedback that, hey, people think you're being a robot, you're robotic, you need to loosen up. I would like even change your outfit. But we worked through like, how can you show up as a human the way you show up? Because they're seeing a person that I don't see, right? I'm seeing a different person. So how can we do that? And we just held another Ask Me Anything, right? When you get people, if leaders normalize conversations, they talked about like things like their burnout and their stress, right? They talked about their father who was ill. They talked about a lot of different things. And I got so many messages after. And so the leader, like, thank you for showing up as a human. And so when we went through more turbulent times, which you always are doing, because that's the new norm, it's people knew it's like, hey, this person also doesn't know everything, but they can talk about like, this is how I'm thinking of it as well. And I think it kind of helped that person become more human. And I think leading with humanity in times of change is really critical. And it also, like when you're experimenting, right, together, because you're, especially in AI, right, you're doing more learning sprints, you're experimenting together. If you can be vulnerable and say, hey, like human to human, like, how are we going to learn this together? I think that creates change is easier kind of from a human perspective.
I think what I hear in this is the capacity, like when you are able to be vulnerable, you shift the mindset from being across the table to being like next to each other, right? The proverbial shoulder to shoulder. I too am a human, right? Like we see each other. Mm-hmm. I think that's a key piece of trust. That's a key piece of how we rebuild, you know, the kind of understanding across people. And so what I think I hear you saying is, how do you decrease the distance between leaders, between the leaders and the employees, let's say, the leadership suite, because there's a natural, there's a hierarchy, of course. But you, and if you have multiple levels between you, you're already projecting as a human, we tend to, our primal brains tend to see hierarchy and leadership. That's kind of what, whether you like it or not, that's where we live. And I think if you have, you know, you report to a manager who reports to a VP who then reports to the executive suite, you've got this real big distance. And so my question is, do you have any other ways? Okay. So to decrease that distance, right? Let's say we have the kind of extreme scenario of like, we don't get to interact with these executives as often as we'd like. How do we flatten it? How do we reduce that distance? So one thing is, you just said, be more, lead with humanity, be more vulnerable about who you are. Any other tips about how to create more connection and trust through reducing that distance?
Yeah, I think, you know, I talked about the AMAs and everything, but another thing about is, I think, there's two things, right? I think anchor everything you do in your values, and your values should be around agility and live them. But the second one is empower your managers, right? Your managers, your middle managers, the ones in between, I call them like the shock absorbers between leadership and employees, right?
That's a great metaphor.
Because they're the ones who are going to help you become an effective leader, right? So for example, like the toolkit, it helps us be aligned. You can put in things like disagree and commit, right? I've worked at companies literally where there was hundreds and hundreds of new managers and we weren't trained. They would say, oh, HR told me this, or this senior leader said this, but I believe this. And now you're creating like people with different perspectives, which is great. That's what you want. But if you're not creating like leaders who are aligned and disagreeing and committing and moving forward, I think that causes a lot of friction between like, and I don't like using those, like, you know, those words, but I just used it right now, between that top layer and the employee population as well. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think empowering your middle managers is really important during these times. Like I worked at like a big mistake I've seen is like, here's an example, right? Like companies who are, if you're not empowering your managers, right, to kind of translate some of those values into practice. Like, for example, one company I worked at, we gave managers kind of carte blanche. It's like, if your employee needs time off, just give them time off. So same situation, one manager would give 2 weeks off. They would speak to their senior leader. Another manager would give the same, a different employee, same situation, 2 months off, right? Now you have like inconsistencies across the organization. So we had to have conversations with leaders of like, okay, what are the guardrails that you need to put in place to make sure that you're all aligned and that the two leaders are being seen as like very aligned when it comes to values and how we do business at the company. So I think those are some examples of like how you can use middle managers during times where you have to make decisions, especially if you don't want this hierarchical organization, right? You need to give middle managers some flexibility, but with some guardrails. Because I've seen it, if you give them no guardrails, like literally it's an employee relations nightmare. managers are doing whatever they want, which is good or bad.
Yeah, right. Well, let's hang on this for a second. How do you determine how much autonomy a manager should have? Because you are talking about adaptability, and we are kind of, I feel like we do fetishize this, the individual, and you and I have had many conversations about like, okay, just like you've got the values and then that's, you know, and then go from there. Like anything within that is reasonable. Which maybe is too far. How do you think about, and it's going to be different for each company, but how do you think about as a leader empowering managers or as managers themselves, like the level of control versus flexibility in a moment when, and I'll go right back to our thesis here, of just insane change.
Yeah. And that's a really good question, because every company is different, right? I've worked companies where there was no hierarchy and managers could make all the decisions. And then I've worked at other companies where you had to kind of go through the ranks. I think there's a happiness in between. What I've seen is, if you're empowering managers to make decisions like the one I just gave you right there, you have to enable them. So you can do something super simple, especially if you're a smaller organization. It's like, okay, these are our values. What are some, you can just have like a brown bag lunch, right? What are some issues that are coming up all the time? Like, hey, people taking time off and we don't have anything, or I'm trying to give this person feedback, they're not receiving it. How can you, you can just have a question and you can just break out into groups. Literally, I've done this at my last company. You had a leader, you had like another senior leader, you had people come in with what are their messy problems that they're dealing with, right? And then you would help just guide them and talk them through of like, this is how we would do this at our organization from a values perspective. And it actually really worked, because you're using real life examples. I think that helps, right? Because nowadays change is happening so fast. The days of the 1 week manager training in person no longer exist, in my opinion. I just don't think you can do that anymore. Yeah. Because things are changing so fast. But if you can have like moments of enablement, or like cohorts that they can rely on each other, or you can have those like cultural ambassadors who kind of get how the culture works, or you can even ask your HR person. But the whole thing is, you want to enable every like leaders to help each other, right? Because that scales. The other way doesn't. It seems simple, but it's not as simple as it is, because you need to make sure that these leaders, again, at the top are aligned on how they would respond, right? And if some one leader is going A and other leaders going, you know, Z or Z, depending on what country you're in, you need to make sure that they're aligned at the top as well.
Zooming out, what I'm taking away from this is there's a fundamental shift in how we operate as an organization. And I think we sort of, we talked about that at the top. I said, you know, that change was once an event, right? Where it would be, we're entering a new market and we're going to restructure. And that was it. And that was it for 10 years. And now it's constant. To me, what it kind of is, a slap in the forehead, kind of, no, like, duh. Now that I'm thinking about it, it's how we operate also has to be a constant in and out check-in. And you've said throughout our conversation in the last 20 minutes, you've said multiple times, or you've given examples multiple times of more frequent, less extensive, like regroups, I might call them, or check-ins, yeah, of where you have to, you can't just set it and forget it. And this seems, I kind of like this idea, and I don't know if this was your intention, but this is what I see. This is kind of the brilliant pattern that I see that you're putting out, which is we need to start questioning and questioning like how frequent we get realigned and talk about that, because there's so much change. The tendency is to say we don't have time, but you know, it's like one of those kind of, if you were a little bit off at the beginning, you're going to be a lot further off in 6 months. I don't know. What do you think about that kind of that idea?
No, I love that idea. I've kind of implemented that at other companies, right? Like, let's think of the performance management process. Some companies do it once a year, right? And then some do it twice a year. But how is that going to make you aligned and effective, right? Some managers don't even have quick one-on-ones. I think having like check-ins, right? Initially, when you're working together, just check in once a week, right? Help enable that person. And then as you get more aligned, you can kind of move faster. You don't have to meet in and check in as much. But I feel in today's world where things are changing quickly, new information is flying in at speeds, you have to be much more agile in this whole thing. You can't just be the way that it was when I first started HR, right? Which was like, let's have our yearly performance review, and we're gonna have a year in review, and we're gonna talk about it, and then let's talk again in a year, have your performances. everything, right? Goals have to change. They need to be much more agile. I do believe the kind of like learning in the flow of work. I think Burson has an article on that like years ago, but I still feel that that's very valid today. It's like you need to, you learn things in your flow of work and you might have new information that you didn't have a week or two ago that could kind of change your opinion and perspective on how you're going to approach this goal or how are you going to have this conversation. So yeah, I feel the communication, the empathy, all of that becomes much more critical nowadays, right? So even with AI, humanity, yeah. Communication, empathy, all of that is going to come more in the forefront as a people leader and as just as a person in general, right?
All right. So in the spirit, as we sort of we're landing the plane here, we're going to wrap up. How would you articulate this need to an executive or a leader or a manager who is insanely busy, because we all are? How would you, like, what would be your pitch? I feel like I get stuck at this. It's just, there's too much thing. There's too many things. I'm behind. I'm underwater. You want me to have more meetings, right? Like we've kind of post COVID, we were like, fuck meetings. We don't need meetings. Meetings suck.
No, meetings are, they suck.
They do suck. So how do you make the case to us?
Look, I don't know. Reality is FUD isn't going away. Everything is shifting, right? As you said in the beginning, AI is disrupting return to office battles. They're not, these things aren't going to be solved overnight. But you need to, as a leader, move forward with, you can't control the storm, right? You need to focus on building clarity, trust, and resilience inside your team. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to do that as a leader, right? What are you? And I would ask the leader, like, what are you going to do? And then we kind of have like a bounce off conversation. Mm-hmm. But again, it's like, you need to, like, your mindset, right? You need to treat uncertainty as a default. It's not the exception anymore. Mm. Be really clear on what you know and what you don't know, right? Model curiosity, invite employees to the problem solving process. You don't have to be the leader who solves everything on your own. I know I was that leader before early on in my career. Yeah. I think practice honesty and bring people into the process. People like things being done with them, not to them, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then just don't hide behind your jargon. Don't just use common English language. don't pretend you know the future, I think. And then just have conversations, right? Just like you and I are having here. Go on a walking conversation, have lunch together. You'll be surprised how just having a conversation can get things moving quickly. And your job is to help people navigate it, the unknown together, right? It's not helping these people kind of figure out what's next, because you're not the leader who needs to know everything. You're the leader who needs to help them navigate and build trust. So I think those are some of the things, like, but it would be a conversation. The leader needs to be like, I talked a lot now. Yeah. The leader needs to do most of the talking in my conversation with
ask
them.
The questions.
Yes.
But I don't have the time. So this is sparking in me a design principle, as I learned this in design school, which is constraints will set you free. And as the storm continues to swirl and get faster, it seems like we need, as leaders inside of organizations, need to do a better job spending more time, more frequently on process and realignment. And that is going to inspire more creativity, productivity, and efficacy, right? If you're operating under the cloud of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, right? Like, where you don't know what's going on, you don't know what decisions you're going to make. Everybody is frozen in time. They can't make decisions because they're afraid they're going to make a mistake. But if we are realigning and we're like, ooh, these things we don't know, these things we do know, and this is how we're going to work together on it, then you're going to free people to be able to do better work in a way that allows them to see, as you said, what we know and what we don't know. And keeping everybody up to date is going is essentially to me kind of the key trait or the key skill of a powerful kind of or organization that's going to thrive in this kind of chaos.
Yeah. And I know a lot of startups don't like the word process. So I think it's just guardrails or however you want to do it, right? It's like, let's just have...
You don't have to call it process. You can do whatever you want. Yes, that's right.
But some guardrails, yeah, having more conversations versus meetings, right? Because I think you want to give enough information so people have more autonomy to move faster, right? Yeah. I think that's really critical. So the more information you have to give them, the more autonomy your team will have and the faster they will be able to move, right? Which is sort of the key.
I love that. I love that. It bears repeating. So how do you provide the guardrails that allow them to have the most autonomy to move forward faster?
Yeah.
And those guardrails might change, and that's okay. We need to be okay with that.
Yes.
Zara Ghulamhussain, thank you so much for coming on Great Mondays Radio. You can find Zara on LinkedIn, and she is available and always loves to talk about this kind of thing. So you can look her up on LinkedIn, Z-A-R-A-H, I think is a good place to start. And her last name, Ghulamhussain. And she invites everybody, if you would like, to send her a message and set up some time to talk. She is happy to chat further. She obviously is a deep well of wisdom when it comes to this kind of stuff. Zara, this has been amazing. Thank you. Well worth the wait.
I know, many years, a decade. I'm not sure. No, it's been fun. I love this. As you can see, this is what I love doing, right? I love helping leaders solve these messy problems, especially nowadays, right? I've lived in 3 different countries. I've worked across 15 plus countries as well. And it's just... It's a lot of fun. It makes your job enjoyable.
Amazing. Thank you, Zara. Thanks for coming on Great Mondays Radio. We'll talk to you soon.
Great.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.